All right, back with us, Bill Hammond, Senior Fellow for Health Policy in the Empire Center. We say a very good morning to Mr. Hammond. Sir, how are you? And thanks for giving us a few. Great to have you.
Very good. Thank you, Jay.
Yep. Bill, you know, a lot has happened in the last couple of days. This thing is not going away. It's getting hot and heavy. You got investigations. You got FBI, District Office of the United States of Brooklyn, investigating. You have the back and forth between a governor and an assemblyman, a heated call that allegedly took place at the assemblyman's home. You've got a lot of unraveling here based on the nursing home disaster. You guys, you know, you kicked it off pretty well in August regarding a lawsuit, FOIL, Freedom of Information request. As far as that is concerned, they did not adhere. Kimberly O'Connor, 5 days with a ruling, come clean. You know, you look back on the series of events, Tish James's report 22 days ago. Incredible amount of information here. Your take.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. It's, you know, one revelation coming after another. It does seem like the dam broke when the Attorney General did her report and the court ordered the state to comply with our FOIL. It brought to light a bunch of new information. And also, it really put the focus on the fact that this information had been withheld for many months, going back really to the beginning of the pandemic. And I think a lot of the anger has to do with the cover-up, rather, in addition to whatever happened in nursing.
The cover-up and the lies, Bill. You know, the lies to the legislature, the DOJ, and everything else, no mentions. You know, the leakage. You know, we have Bernadette Hogan on from the Post. You know, they did a wonderful job from the get-go. You know, you just have so much mistruth involved with this whole thing. And, you know, the thing that really gets me is, you know, you have a governor who had a press conference on Monday, you know, no apologies, no nothing, standing by, you know, whatever the heck he said, which was a bunch of nonsense. But really, you know, just not taking, you know, contrition and everything. You look for something. You didn't get it, you know. And I keep thinking of families. You know, I keep thinking of families who have lost loved ones, even those who are in these facilities. No visitation and the strict rules and everything else. No compassion, you know. That's what rubs so much salt in these wounds right now. For a guy like me who, you know, didn't have one in a nursing home. But I can only feel, I've known many people who lost loved ones, you know, and I can only feel for them throughout this process.
Yeah, so in my current job as a reporter, I used to pay a lot of attention to what people said about what they were doing. And, I would quote experts and I would quote politicians. In my current job, I try to get beyond that and look at what the underlying facts are. And often that involves getting data. And so I'm less concerned with what the governor says about what happened, except to the extent that I'm checking his facts. And more concerned with what actually happened. And that's why I was, along with a lot of other people, I was really focused on getting the data, the actual count of nursing home residents who died, in addition to the actual information about how many coronavirus positive patients were admitted to these nursing homes. Those are, like, if you want to understand what happened, you have to know the underlying facts. And I mean, as it happens, we now have a lot more of those underlying facts. And my colleague Ian Kinsbury at the Empire Center, with me, we did a statistical analysis of the data that's available. And it was interesting to me because you hear from some people that what the governor did was, you know, mass murder that took out 15,000 seniors. And then you hear from the governor himself and his defenders that, no, actually, that policy made no real difference, that, you know, the virus was already in the homes and the particular patients we're talking about weren't especially infectious. And if you, well, when we looked closely at the data, what we found was in between those two extremes. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised by that. It clearly did have an effect, or at least the numbers show a correlation between the number of positive patients who are admitted to nursing homes and the rate of mortality in those nursing homes. However, that effect does not come close to explaining all of the deaths in the nursing home. So I've sort of believed all along that what we're talking about is a policy that made a bad situation worse, not a policy that created the bad situation in the first place.
No question. You see, I look at it like this. Justice Department, if you're going to shun them, that is not good. But, you know, to me, when you provide data to public health officials and it's not accurate, you know, and you have, you know, you hear all this thing from, you know, science, we go by the science. And if you're trying to figure, you know, if you're a scientist, you're trying to figure out how the virus is spreading, most vulnerable, who is it, how to stop it. And pretty much they rely on the information. And when you have this administration, now that it's come out, providing incomplete data about the nursing home deaths, because, you know, there was a fear. There was a fear of the administration, the Trump administration. There was a fear of coming out that it would be not beneficial to him in particular. And I'm talking about from a political standpoint, because let's face it, his stock was high. He was being considered as a candidate for the president of the United States at one time. That's right. You know, attorney general. Well, maybe if not now, 2024. So there was a lot on the line. But, you know, it was all, in my opinion, about him. And then, of course, the March 25th deal, ordering Holmes to accept known or suspected COVID-19 hospital patients. Prohibiting facilities from requiring tests to see whether or not that they had the infection. You know, this is serious stuff. When you have inaccurate data, that is an issue to me because that could lead to so many things from a scientific standpoint, you know, and you're messing with lives here, not only emotion, but physical, tangible lives that you are messing with. And that's what has occurred here.
Yeah, no, there's no question. The situation in the nursing homes was really bad, but, and I think most people were aware of that, but we didn't know how bad. We didn't have, you know, the death toll that the state was putting out was about 2/3 of the actual death toll. And in addition to not sharing the full information, the governor and his people were saying that actually the state had done a great job of protecting nursing homes. And they based that judgment, they were quoting statistics that were based on the inaccurate count. So that is a dangerous thing to do, to encourage complacency in the population about a really dangerous virus, especially dangerous virus for nursing home residents. I think the people in the nursing home industry themselves were not misled about how bad things were. I will say that they were also among the people who were asking for this data and not getting it, at least going back to the spring and summer when the hearings were going on. They testified that they had asked the state to share they're providing the state with data from their individual facilities, and they wanted to see the big picture. They wanted to see what was going on in their neighboring nursing homes or in the statewide industry. And the health department wasn't willing to share. And if you look at the coverage of the investigation, which is apparently in a pretty early stage, the FBI sniffing around and a U.S. attorney from the Eastern District of New York and Brooklyn asking questions, it's a little hard to know exactly what they're looking at because it's all off the record and the coverage is based on leaks. But one theme that I've noticed that's coming out of that coverage is that they're concerned about inaccurate reporting of data. And I'm not sure how that would become a crime. It would, you'd have to find an example where the data was given to the government in such a way that it was defrauding the government. At least that would be my expectation. And I'm not aware of exactly where that would be. However, that is an example of withholding data coming back to bite you in the face, because that, like, this, had they been honest about the data all along, that part of the federal investigation wouldn't even be necessary, and there might not be an investigation in the first place.
Yeah, no, ego reared its ugly head here, because to me, it's obstruction. Any way you look at it, it's obstruction of the Justice Department. When you're giving inaccurate information, to me, you're trying to make yourself look better, okay? And that for political gain, I mean, that's all you could say. I mean, he had the book, he had the Emmy, he had everything going for himself. You know, I mean, what was next? A picture of, I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. If he would have been truthful, if he would have owned up to the mistakes, the most susceptible, the most vulnerable to this virus is our elderly. If he would have apologized, I think it would have been a lot better for him. But the last week, you know, it's just unacceptable to me. You're fighting allegedly with an assemblyman with his story, Ron Kim, threatening him, making threats. You know, the family standing there, and his wife, Kim's wife, standing there completely. I mean, the way he described it was pathetic, in my opinion. And, you know, listen, what happens from now is going to be interesting, because lawmakers are talking about revoking his pandemic emergency powers. That's just the start of it all. You know, I can't help but think, Bill Hammond, if Donald Trump, and I hate to make these comparisons, but it's true. If Donald Trump were in office, you'd have impeachment number three being bandied about here. You know, listen, his actions right now, this governor's actions, to me, merits his removal from office without question. Not just for the cover-up, but I'm talking about from our response here as in a national sense. So in essence, this is serious stuff here.
Well, no question it's serious stuff. And I feel like so now we're having a controversy about the governor berating members of the legislature. And there's kind of another layer of controversy about how he hid the numbers in the first place. There's a controversy over the policy in March 25th that sent the positive patients into nursing homes. I feel like there's a bigger and deeper issue that we're not getting to because we're forced to respond to these more recent issues. And the bigger thing is that this virus caught the world and the U.S. and New York in particular unprepared. And if, like, the most important thing for us to do coming out of this pandemic is not to let it happen again. And that means understanding where our defenses broke down, what opportunities there might have been to contain the virus when it arrived here and keep it in better check. And that conversation hasn't started yet, and I wonder if it'll ever start. In order to have that conversation, you would have to have a lot of information about what was known and when and how it was responded to. And we know some of that, but I feel like there's a lot more to be discussed and analyzed. And if you had done a better job in January and February and early March, if you had responded more effectively, you wouldn't have gotten such a nasty outbreak, one of the worst outbreaks in the world, and you might not have needed to even think about sending positive patients into nursing homes. I know we have to have a conversation about accountability, and we have to bang the drum on transparency, because we can't have that deeper conversation about the pandemic until we have transparency.
No, 100%, I agree with you. But, I mean, let's always remember, though, okay, you had an unoccupied ship in Manhattan Harbor. You had Javits Center on the conversion with hospital beds. You had hospitals being built by the Army Corps of Engineers, okay? Let's not forget the good things that Trump did for New York. And, in fact, this governor praised him for helping out. And, and then he turned on a dime as far as being against him, you know? So let's remember what the former president of the United States, because, yeah, he botched COVID up at the end. There's no question. He forgot about it. But let's not forget the good things that Trump did for Andrew Cuomo. And Andrew Cuomo did nothing. He did not have to put COVID positive back into those facilities, Bill. He had other venues in which he could have put those individuals. Okay? So the way I look at it, that's the way I kind of see things a little bit here. And the governor did not make the right choices. Go ahead.
So many of the bad things that came out of this were based on a poor understanding of what was going on at the time, which in turn was based on a lack of preparation and kind of diminished public health resources. The reason the governor asked for federal help in terms of building out a temporary space at Javits and bringing in the Navy hospital ship, the reason he asked for that was he was terrified, based on projections from ostensible experts, that the wave was going to crest so high that it was going to completely swamp and overwhelm hospitals, and there would be, you know, sick people dying in the streets, not unlike a situation that did happen in parts of Italy. And as a result of that, they turned out to be wrong about how high the wave would crest. Maybe in part because of, you know, our response, which included, you know, the shutdown and the social distancing and not going to restaurants, canceling basketball games. Those things helped them make the crest. But they were operating on the assumption that it was going to crest at this catastrophic level. And if that's your belief, then you need Javits and you need the Navy hospital ship for that and not for a way station for nursing home residents. So the policy that the fear that drove the 325 memo was the same fear that drove the creation of Javits and drove the visit from the hospital ship. And so long as you believed the wave was going to do what the experts projected, you didn't want to put anyone other than hospital patients in those facilities. In retrospect, they were just wrong. The projections were wrong. The crest never happened. But we didn't know that until mid-April when, you know, we could see the numbers going down. You know, it's true that they had facilities they didn't use. The thing is, they thought they were going to need them, and they, thank goodness, they didn't need them. I would go back again to the issue of the lack of preparedness. I think that the difficulty of how to handle this particular set of nursing home residents, they had recovered from COVID. At least that's, in theory, that's who they were. They were stabilized. They'd gotten past it. You know, they were off the ventilator. And it was time for them to go home. And for them, home was a nursing home. I don't think it's safe, at least with some nursing home residents, to put them in a place like Javits. They might have wandering issues, and Javits wasn't really set up for people who were likely to wander away from their beds.
But yeah, but Bill,
they did need some solution for those patients. They needed a safe place to put them that would be appropriate to their needs, but wouldn't put other people at risk. And they, if they had, they could have seen that issue coming if they had done the full-fledged pandemic planning. Certainly before the next pandemic, we'll be on alert for this issue. And one of the things we'll be looking for in that pandemic plan is, what are you going to do with potentially infectious people who live in nursing homes, and how are you going to handle them? I mean, these people were being admitted to nursing homes with a coronavirus infection, but you also had patients already in the nursing homes who had coronavirus infections, and they weren't necessarily being handled properly because the homes didn't have the equipment they needed, they didn't have the space and the staff they needed. There was a lot of issues that came up related to nursing homes. It all contributed to a very high death toll. About 1 in 7 residents died ultimately. And those are the things that we need to be ready for the next time we have a virus like this.
No, I'm with you 100%. You know, we've got to learn some lessons here. But it made no sense to put infectious people back into those homes. It made no sense. And the only reason why I say, I mean, you had 500 beds on that comfort ship. 500 unoccupied. So, you know, there should have been an epiphany of some sort where, you know what, let's utilize this. Okay? That's my objection in a big way. The fact that that ship in that harbor was unoccupied for so long. Listen, we'll see what transpires over the next couple. But right now, it is. Let's put it this way: the heat is on in every avenue right now, leading to Albany. Bill Hammond,
yeah.
Senior Fellow, Health Policy at the Empire Center. We thank you, sir. And I'm sure we'll have many a conversation coming into play.
I look forward to it, Dave.